This is the story of the First Crusade, one of personal heroics and sacrifice, and probably one of the most bloody messes in history. It was sparked by Pope Urban II, followed by the crazy, out-of-hand People's Crusade, and concluded with the noble Prince's Crusade, taking Jerusalem in a bloodbath of Jews and Muslims alike. Hello, my name is Isaiah, and today we'll be exploring the First Crusade.
Salve, Regina,
The First Crusade was the beginning of a number of battles between the Catholics and the Muslims, with a chief aim of taking Jerusalem. Many myths surround the Crusades, to much controversy regarding the morality and result of the wars. To begin describing the Crusades, we must first examine the recent history of England and the Middle East. After the death of Christ, Christianity swiftly spread like a wildfire through the Roman Empire. By the end of the 4th century, the Roman Empire had officially become Christian due to the conversion of Emperor Constantine in 312 AD. During the Middle Ages, Europe and the Middle East were divided into Christianity and Muslims. The cause for the First Crusades was the rise of the Seljuk Turks, who won multiple victories in Asia Minor against Byzantine armies, specifically the Battle of Manzikert in August 1071 AD. Due to their victory, they gained control of cities such as Edessa and Antioch.
By the time 1087 AD came rolling around, they had taken control of the holy city, Jerusalem. Soon the Byzantine Emperor, Alexios I Komnenos, recognized that this was a chance to gain the assistance of the Western armies in his struggle to obtain Asia Minor. Therefore, Alexios appealed to the Western allies for soldiers. He begged the Western Christians for aid in recapturing the previously Christian lands and getting rid of the Seljuk Turks. The appeal was sent to Pope Urban II, who proved exceptionally responsive. Consequently, so did thousands of European knights.
Pope Urban II gave a sermon at the Council of Clermont, which proved extremely motivational. Three written editions of this sermon exist. Each are slightly different. Pope Urban II had stirred a great avalanche of knights and people's imaginations. He called the Knights of Christendom to come to the aid of their Christian brothers in the East. On the set departure date, the 15th of August, 1096. Around 60,000 crusaders showed up, all wearing a cross on their shoulder to proclaim the oath made to take up the cross. This included some 6,000 knights who set out on their perilous quest. Frankly, contrary to what Pope Urban II and Alexios had intended, it wasn't just knights that set out. The first major group was the People's Army, which made itself up of both insignificant knights and the poor, who were commanded by the preacher Peter the Hermit and the knight Walter the Penniless. They preceded the subsequent Prince's Crusade, but we'll get to that in a bit. This People's Army were ill-equipped and by necessity were driven to foraging as they crossed Europe, which didn't get them many friends along the way. Peter had harassed the people with his claims of his recent pilgrimage to Jerusalem, where the Muslims allegedly tortured him, although there is no evidence that Peter had ever even been to Jerusalem. Pope Urban II had cleverly set the 15th of August, 1096, as the day that the Crusaders set off, since it would be during the autumn harvest, and if they were low on supplies on the road, they could easily harvest since in the winter the land was barren. Peter's People Crusade set off, quite frankly, a year before the set date. But Peter's Crusade wasn't the only People's Crusade leaving early. There were multiple other people in the surrounding states that were forming other armies. For one, there was a group from France, led by a guy named Walter Saint-Navoir, who showed up at Belgrade to the confusion of the local governor, who had been told that the Crusaders were going to show up half a year later. So he basically told them to wait outside the city, and he was going to send a message to Alexios and ask for further instruction. Meanwhile, the Seljuk Turks had their own problems to deal with. They had taken control of most of Asia Minor and northern Syria in the late 1100s. They were in conflict with their bitter rivals, the Shi'ite Fatimids, who were based in Egypt. The Seljuks had grappled Jerusalem from the Shi'ite Fatimids. However, a serious blow to the Seljuks came with the death of the mighty Seljuk Sultan Malik Shah in 1092 AD. Consequently, there was a scramble for power by various local warlords, though none ultimately gaining supremacy. The Seljuk base was in Baghdad, pretty far from the battles, which would soon occur throughout the First Crusade, and therefore there was little centralized management or support of the war. On top of all this, the Shi'ite Muslims managed to recapture control of the prestigious Jerusalem from the Seljuks just a few months before the Crusaders came in. Also, both of the Muslim groups were most likely totally unaware of the religious nature of the Crusaders' quest. They probably thought they were just one of the Byzantine raiding parties. But the noble knights of the West were not interested in harassing an enemy and carrying off with the booty. No, they were here to take back Jerusalem. Well, back at Belgrade, Walter's group were waiting outside the city, starving and freezing. Thus, they've pillaged the countryside. In all fairness though, they were starving, and this is spring in medieval Europe. There was no hot dog stands around, and the land was barren in this time of year. The bulk of the food comes in during the autumn harvest, and during the spring, there's not much food around. Soon the remainders of Walter's army were escorted to Constantinople. Some of them had gone back to Hungary. Walter and Peter weren't the only others leading the increasingly wild people's armies. There was also a disastrous group from Germany, led by Count Immico of Leiningen. He had heard Peter's preaching and gathered his own army. But after they set out, it was not long before they had decided to attack the nearby Jewish villages. They savagely killed the Jews, who were much less armed, and they stole all the gold they found. This is not what the Pope, or Alexios, had intended. The Pope had called for defense for their Christian brothers in the East. Even if Pope Urban didn't care about the Jews, no way he would want them to slaughter out of hatred. There are heroic tales of bishops opposing the rogue Crusaders. The Bishop of Spire gave the Jews his protection. The Bishop of Worms gave the Jews refuge in his home, even to the point of fortifying the hold. But sadly, the Crusaders attacked and stormed the house, slaughtering over 800 Jews. The Bishop of Mentz did the same thing, and even ordered the town to be barred. The people even raised a big amount of money to give to Immico if he would just go away and leave him alone. Immico took the gold, but he plundered the village anyway.
They then made their way to Hungary, but the king of Hungary simply did not want to let them in. So then the Crusaders laid siege to the Christian city of Mosin, and quite frankly, were promptly defeated and slaughtered by the city garrison. The Shoulders. Women and children too come away from their countries. Eventually, the rest of the People's Crusade wound up in Constantinople in the early summer of 1096 AD, with the aim of then moving on to Jerusalem. Anna Komnena, historian and daughter of Emperor Alexios, describes the first Congress in her Alexiad. And those Frankish soldiers were accompanied by an unarmed host, more numerous than the sand or the stars, carrying palms and crosses on their swords. They were then swiftly shipped by Alexios to Asia Minor. Ignoring the Byzantines' advice, they were ambushed and promptly wiped out near Nicaea by a Seljuk army led by Khalid Jazan on the 21st of October, 1096 AD. Pope Urban did not have this in mind when he sparked the Crusade movement. Thus ended the People's Crusade, probably the most out-of-control mess in history. The second wave of Crusaders, the Prince's Crusade, composed of more gentlemanly and professional knights and warriors. This second wave arrived in Constantinople in the autumn and winter of 1096 AD. This second batch was not much of an improvement for the Emperor, as it included, amongst its leaders, an old enemy, Norman Bohemond of Taranto. He and his father, Robert Guiscard, the Duke of Apulia, had attacked Byzantine Greece between 1081 and 1084 AD. In 1097 AD, Bohemond and his knights reached Constantinople, and at first, things went well, Norman swearing allegiance to the Emperor alongside the other crusading leaders, such as Godfrey of Boulogne, the Duke of Lower Lorraine, and Raymond IV, aka Raymond de Saint-Gilles, who was the Count of Toulouse. There were many other nobles commanding their own contingent of knights and warriors, and with the issue of language barriers on top of that, it was a miracle that the Crusaders achieved anything at all. Their success would astound everyone. Alexios used the Crusaders well. The Normans were keen to defeat the Seljuks and establish some new kingdoms of their own. Alexios could well have gone along with this plan, as such kingdoms might prove to be a beneficial buffer on the Empire's borders. With a mixed force of Crusaders and Alexios' army, commanded by the Byzantine general Tatikios, somehow they managed to recapture Nicaea in June 1097 AD. Although it was the Seljuks who had preferred to abandon it and fight another day. Next, the Crusaders swept over the Anatolian plain and won a great triumph at Dorylaeum on July 1st, 1097 AD. The Crusader / Byzantine army then split up in September 1097, with one army moving east towards Edessa, and the others went southeast to Sicilia. The primary party headed towards Antioch, which is in Syria, the great city, one of five patriarchal seats of the church. The marvelous city was once home to St. Paul and Peter, and thought to be the birthplace of Luke. There was great zeal to get it back in Christian hands. The city was well fortified by Justinian, but the humongous walls constructed by him were just too much for the Crusaders. The walls flew off the city like wings, high into the mountain. The city was impossible to encircle. Quite frankly, some of the gates stood high atop nearby mountains, or others behind a river, which would split the Crusaders' forces. So the Crusaders came up with a plan, though it was quite strange. They were going to get the contingents to blockade most of the city's gates, which seemed to defeat the point of a siege. Finally, Antioch was captured on the 3rd of June, 1098 AD, following a toilsome 8-month siege, where the Crusaders themselves came under siege from the Muslim force from Mosul. The Crusaders additionally suffered from plague, famine, and desertions. Unfortunately for Alexius, on his way to support the siege of the city of Antioch, he came across refugees from the area who misinformed him that the Crusaders were getting smashed by a huge Muslim army. So the emperor returned home with his reinforcements. Bohemond was not pleased to hear his army had been deserted by their Byzantines, even if he ended up capturing the city anyway. Norman decided to rebel on his vow to return all captured territory to the emperor, and so he kept the city for himself. It was December of 1098 AD, and the Crusaders marched onwards to Jerusalem, along the way capturing multiple Syrian port cities. And finally, they arrived at their final destination on the 7th of June, 1099. After the events of the First Crusade so far, the original vast and mighty army had decreased to around 1,300 knights and some 12,500 infantry. Now they had achieved the primary goal of the crusade, to capture Jerusalem. By the looks of it, they had no chance. Jerusalem, protected by massive walls and a combo of moat and cliffs, and the surrounding countryside was stripped bare, so they had no chance of making siege towers. Fortunately, a number of Genoese ships were passing by, carrying lumber. They agreed to give the timber to the Crusaders for the construction of siege towers, catapults, and a battering ram. In spite of these weapons, the defenders resisted the siege. But the Muslim garrison was strangely reluctant to raid the besiegers, maybe content to sit and wait for the backup from Egypt. Then, abruptly, Godfrey of Boulogne craftily came up with a clever plan. He decided to arrange his siege tower at one part of the wall, at which the defenders prepared their defences. Then, under the cover of night, the Crusaders set up their siege tower at a weaker place in the wall, where the defence was weak and unprepared. And with Godfrey commanding from the front, the mighty Crusaders scaled the defences, and after swaying warfare, brutal and bloody battle, found themselves within the city on the 15th of July, 1099 AD. A mass slaughter of Jews and Muslims followed, with Jerusalem allegedly being ankle-deep in blood, although figures of 10,000 or even 75,000 people killed are likely exaggerated. Men, women, and children were slaughtered in this massacre. Only one of the youngest leaders of the Crusaders, Tancred, tried to stop the carnage, even offering a group of Muslims his banner as a sign of protection. He was then called off to attend some other part of the fighting, and when he returned, he found them dead upon the temple floor. And though this disgraceful massacre, they had taken Jerusalem at last. The Egyptian army the garrison had sent for were taken care of a month later at Ascalon. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the crazy and awesome story of the First Crusade. Thanks for listening.